We'll call the Public Safety and Security Policy Finance Committee to order. We'll start with the roll call.
Johnson.
Here.
Plomer.
Here.
Hillstrom.
Here.
Beckerfin.
Here.
Considine.
Here.
Dean.
Here.
Frankie.
Here.
Grossel. Howe. Lucero. Neuberger. O'Neill.
Here.
Pinto.
Here.
Uglum.
Here.
Ward.
Here.
Zerwas.
Oh, there's loan overdue.
Representative Pinto, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I have, and I move approval of the minutes.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They are approved. First off this morning, we're going to start with House File 3157. We'll move to re-refer to the General Register, House File 3157. Representative Greenwood, you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe there's a DE amendment.
The chair will move DE1. All those get it in the author's the way the author intends. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Green, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Back before your committee, and I appreciate the input that I had the last time I was here. I think we've tried to answer as many of the concerns as we could through the folks that testified. The bill is before you. It's a pretty simple bill. It hasn't changed a lot. There's some technical changes and a few safeguards that were put in it, and so I'll just stand for questions.
First testifier is going to be Ron Elwood. If you could please state your name for the record, then proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and I have with me two staff attorneys from the Legal Aid's Minnesota Disability Law Center to answer any technical questions. Chad Wilson to my left and Justin Page behind me. Thank you again for allowing us to participate in this hearing. First off, really want to thank Representative Green for making the changes and for indulging me coming into his office. I'm not sure that open door policy is going to be remain anymore if I go one more time, but I do appreciate his indulgence. I do want to say that the new definitions there on lines 1.4 through 1.8. Dramatically strengthen the bill and really tighten it to the point where, as we had mentioned before, this does eliminate the service pony or the service horse issue, because it under the definition that you have here, referring to the Code of Federal Regulations, it only deals with a dog. So I think it's significantly better. We have a couple of additional tightening recommendations, which I think would, again, improve and strengthen this bill. And let me say before I even proceed that we really appreciate Representative Green bringing this bill forward. We, of course, agree with him and all the proponents that misrepresenting a service animal is an egregious act. It should be condemned. It should be addressed, and we shouldn't allow it. That's something that we I can't imagine anybody actually doing it, but clearly they do. So we are on that score. We're certainly on the same side. We would suggest that where on line 1.10 the word misrepresent is there. But there is really no definition of what misrepresentation is. I think the bill would be improved if we could describe and define what misrepresentation is. In other states, that the law says that a misrepresentation is bringing in an animal that is not a service animal, or that a person that does not have a disability would be misrepresenting by bringing an animal. So I think the bill could be strengthened if we actually defined what misrepresentation is. Second of all, because you've now, Representative Green now has referenced the CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations, which means that it is only a dog, I do think it might be helpful to provide a sentence in there that permits a store owner to exclude any animal that is not a dog. That's really clear. And that would strengthen the hand, I think, of the proprietors and allow folks to just say, if you're not a dog, you cannot be in here under the law. Third, we would suggest that, you know, under the federal law, even if it is a service animal, but that service animal is either not in control of the handler or not housebroken, which is rare, but it does happen. Under the federal law, you can kick that person and dog out, even if it's a service animal and they're either not housebroken or they are unruly. And we would suggest that adding that would also strengthen the hand of the business owners to be able to exclude unruly animals, regardless of whether they are or not service animals. The other thing that we would suggest is that we would require a supervisor to be the one that asks the person to leave, as opposed to just a regular employee. It's very difficult sometimes to decide whether somebody is or is not a legitimate, has a legitimate service animal. And we think that if we're going to get into any kind of a confrontation in a grocery store or any place else, it probably should be done by supervisory personnel. And we would require that they would ask the two questions that they have to ask under federal law, put it in Minnesota law. Is this a service animal? And if so, what task and what work are they trained to perform? That way, the very bright lines, I think it protects everybody. We would also suggest that we clarify that the store owner may not ask for certification because that is not required under the federal law, and I think we should put that in Minnesota law. And finally, on that score, for tightening purposes, we would suggest a cross-reference to Section 363A.33, which provides a civil remedy for a person who is improperly excluded. So if you have a legitimate service dog and you have the right to be in, and you are excluded illegally, there is a remedy, a civil remedy under the Human Rights Act, and we would just connect the dots. And then finally, we had last time suggested that maybe we go down a trespass road, but we heard loud and clear the chair's thoughts on that, and so and that has just gone over like pretty much like a lead balloon here, so we've decided that's probably not a good way to go. However, we did some more investigation and research and found that while, yes, there are about 20 states that make misrepresentation a crime, you may be surprised to know that 29 states make interfering with a service animal or illegally denying access also a misdemeanor. And we would suggest respectfully that we make it even. In fact, of those 29 states, Georgia, for example, makes interfering with a service animal a misdemeanor of a high and aggravated nature, and Ohio actually provides varying degrees of felonies if the interference with the service animal results in injury or death of the dog. So we would respectfully ask that that be included in the bill, and I think if we did these things, this bill would be probably the strongest in the nation, and we would think we could easily support that. So thank you. We'd be happy to stand for questions, and again, appreciate Representative Green's indulgence of all our suggestions and comments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to address a few of them. It was quite lengthy, but it was suggested that we maybe ask people what their disability is. Well, we can't. Under law, we can't do that. You can't ask them what their disability is. So that would not be pertinent here. The other thing is that the penalties, under civil penalties right now, you can be charged between $4,000 and $20,000 in civil penalties. And those have been charged in case, I got one here in Alabama, business was ordered to pay $2,500 to an individual and $2,500 to U.S. federal government. So there are penalties out there now, and to add more into the bill could be redundant and I believe unnecessary. We've already addressed the trespass law, and the definition of the animal is already in code. It's already there. And we reference that in this bill already. So I don't think that those things are necessary. And by the way, Mr. Elwood, the door is always open to my office. I told you that before.
I believe Representative Hillstrom has a question. All right. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to be clear, the questions that we would propose be required to be asked is not that about the disability, it's whether the dog is a service dog and what tasks or work are they trained to perform, which are precisely the two questions that are required in the ADA that can be asked. And just to be clear, and I understand Representative Green's responses to our suggestion to add the misdemeanor for denial of access or interference, but the penalties that Representative Green is referring to are civil penalties. We're suggesting to, if you're going to make it a crime to misrepresent, then we should also make it a crime to deny access. So they would be, one civil, this would be criminal.
Representative Hillstrom?
I'm fine. Sure.
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two things. One is, if the animals in question are just dogs, would it make sense, I guess this is maybe to the bill's author, Representative Green, would it make sense to just have the language be about dogs, just to have some clarity for everybody involved? Because you see service animal, you think it's something broader.
Representative Green?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, I think we can continue to debate this, but that's what the bill says. I mean, we are referencing law. We have given in the bill provision for stickers to be made, to be put up, to tell people the laws going into that establishment and basically what the laws are both for Minnesota now, if this passes, and also ADA. And so I think the bill is complete. I think it's what we need, and I think all the questions that you're asking and the provisions that are being brought up are addressed in this bill now. Yeah, you might have to look up a statute, but it's there.
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, I may just encourage, I feel like it could be, have the notice, et cetera, be clear if it's a particular kind of animal. But the other question is, it does have to do with the parallelism here, and this maybe is for House research as to what, if this is set up that there's the petty misdemeanor and then a misdemeanor on the one side for misrepresenting an animal, what is the penalty right now? And what will the penalty be for excluding a service animal, like a proper service animal, from a store, if I can ask that, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, we're looking then at the Human Rights Act. And within the Human Rights Act, we're dealing with Section 363A.30. That has sort of a general catch-all provision in Subdivision 4, which says unfair discriminatory practice, a misdemeanor. And I'm just going to read it because it's a fairly short sentence. In addition to all other remedies provided under this chapter, every person who commits an unfair discriminatory act as set forth in Section 363A.11 or aids, abets, incites, compels, or coerces another to do so shall be guilty of a misdemeanor.
Mr. Chair, one final question then. And I guess this is maybe to Mr. Elwood. So it sounds like actually a discriminatory practice of excluding a service animal could very well be a misdemeanor, in which case there would be the parallelism on both sides. Can you just comment on that? Because it does seem to me that it makes sense that, you know, if you misrepresent an animal, that should be one thing, and then if you have an actual animal that's being blocked, that should be the same. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Elwood?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pinto, I think that's kind of what we were trying to get at in making the connecting the dots, because the 29 states that have of the 29 states that do criminalize interfering, 11 of those also criminalize misrepresentation. So they have a parallel structure. And I just think, as we had recommended earlier in cross-referencing the civil remedies, I think it would be tighter to make sure that, we're sort of saying what's good for the goose is good for the gander and making it crystal clear in the statute. Because this is a new thing now, putting in making it a crime of misrepresentation. So,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's clear that there's a misdemeanor in the law currently. The question is, who is charged with charging that offense? So what jurisdiction would have the authority to actually charge somebody with that misdemeanor?
Mr. Johnson?
All right. Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, the law is silent on that at this point, so I don't have an answer for that. I would assume as a misdemeanor it would either be a city, county, or possibly the Attorney General, but I can't say for certain right now.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Green, maybe between now and the floor we could make it clear in your bill who would have the authority or lack of the authority to do the misdemeanor that you already referenced is in law.
I will most certainly look, Mr. Chair, I will most certainly look into that, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you.
With that, I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 3157 to the General Register as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
We will bring up House File 3504, Representative Zerwas. I believe your bill is going to civil on next, if you'd like to make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my motion.
Motion is to re-refer to civil law. Go ahead, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 3504 deals with a database that's currently being used legally to identify gang members. And currently, following changes to the legislation, there was an agreement reached to purge names in the convicted gang member database following 3 years after the last recorded conviction, adjudication, or state adjudication of that individual. What we found is that many individuals are having their names purged while currently incarcerated but still participating in gang activity while incarcerated and in the penal facility. This bill would change the start of that 3-year clock to be upon release, and so that assuming the individuals are still participating in ongoing gang criteria that is documented by the facility and the Commissioner of Corrections, that 3-year timeline would begin once that individual is released from prison. The behavior, there's a set of criteria that need to be met in order to be placed in the database that qualifies as gang-related activity. Those activities need to be continued to be documented while in custody under the Commissioner of Corrections. that has to be documented, and that documentation can be used to maintain that person's inclusion in the gang database. Right now, currently, officer safety is being jeopardized as individuals are removed from the list while they serve their prison term, while oftentimes still participating in prison gang activities, are still running with their gang members while in custody. They're released. They're no longer included in that gang database, even though their activity and their gang membership really never lapsed. It just hasn't been documented while they were in custody. I have Andy Skookman from the Chiefs Association who can provide a little bit more detail. And then I think if we have further questions about the database itself, we have individuals in the audience that can be available to answer some questions.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Andy Skookman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. Our association represents more than 500 law enforcement leaders, including more than 300 police chiefs in communities large and small, urban and rural, all across the state of Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Zerwas for authoring this bill, and thank you all for your time today to hear what our members feel is a very important piece of legislation. The Criminal Gang Investigative Data System is one resource police officers use to investigate criminal activity and obtain information on people who are suspected of crimes. It's a tool used by police officers on the street to help them get a better understanding of someone's gang affiliation. The bill before you today will make this a better tool and a more sound resource. It will help officers better protect themselves and ultimately the citizens in their communities. Our association stands in full support of this bill. It closes a loophole that allows, as Representative Zerwas said, incarcerated individuals who are still participating in documented gang activity behind bars to be purged from the database. Once those individuals are released from prison, any officer who comes in contact with them will have no knowledge of their activities or affiliations, and that could put their safety at risk. I thank you for your time and ask for your support of House File 3504.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Zerwas, is there a reason why we don't make it after they're done with their service completely? I mean, such as probation, that type of thing, and we just do it upon release?
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, members, this database going back several years has been the focus of a lot of concern about whether or not you continue to aggregate and collect information on individuals and kind of give someone a scarlet letter of gang activity or gang membership. The continuation of 3 years within the system was a negotiated time frame from several years ago. This just starts that clock, as it were, upon release. If there's documented gang behavior while the individual is in the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections, I'm not here trying to lengthen or kind of rehash an argument around data privacy that this legislature has had previous to you and I serving here. What I'm trying to do is make sure that that time frame is an accurate representation and begins when someone is released from custody.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Zerwas. So when I think of the 3 year beginning at the time of release, why is it at the time of release from incarceration versus like time of release from supervision or something like that? Because an individual could be under supervision for 5 years after their release, but according to the way you've written this bill, that the continuation would only be for that 3 remaining years. And then when you bring up the issue of documented incidents of gang activity, wouldn't that, I mean, my head goes to, well, why wouldn't that be sort of a start of a period instead of some other date?
Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, Representative Dean, I think based on supervision or date of release. That's getting back to Representative House's question in the idea of not trying to rewrite statute from a negotiated position from several years ago about the retention of names within the gang database. And so not trying to reopen up that data privacy discussion. And so we're starting it on the day of release, the three-year timetable, not because because I think that's what we can get past, quite frankly. And why wouldn't it start on the date of the last documented gang activity within the correctional facility? We think it's just a lot easier to keep track of to do it upon release from the facility.
Any public testimony? Since there doesn't appear to be a representative, Zerwas, do you wish to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, thank you for the time. And I renew my motion for House Bill 3504 to be re-referred to civil law.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next, we have House File 1180, Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pleased to be here this morning to present House File 1180. I understand that we're looking at going to Ways and Means.
That is correct.
All right. I have Representative Frank Hornstein with me today, too, and I want to really reiterate that this is a bipartisan bill. There's no politics in this bill. It's a matter of saving people's lives and the carnage that's out on the road today. House File 1180 is supported by...
Uglum,
yes.
Do you have a motion where you'd like this bill to go first?
Mr. Chair, I would like to motion that this goes to House File 1180 goes to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Yep. House File 1180 has broad support. It's supported by law enforcement, the Minnesota insurance industry, the Trucking Association, even the Bicycle Alliance and the Motorcycle Guys. Are for this because of all the fatalities that they've had. Minnesota Safety Council, and also many of you that I have to thank you, many people that are on this committee are co-sponsors of this bill. And we have 35 other co-sponsors in the House, and I am introducing a clone bill because more authors want to be on it. And, of course, you know, 35 is the max that we could fit on the green jackets. About the bill, and I have many testifiers, so I'll be respectful of everyone's time, but this cell phone hands-free bill does exactly that. You can use your cell phone. It has to be in a hands-free mode. There are over 15 states and over 110 million people that are already driving under these types of provisions around the country. So it has exemptions for GPS, if you have a GPS, also for law enforcement in emergency, and if you have to dial 911, if you check, you'll see there's many exemptions in the bill for emergency situations. The bill itself basically does not change the penalties. My bill does not change the penalties. It leaves the penalties the same. I have had numerous people come up to me and say they would love to see greater penalties. I think Representative Frankie has a bill that's moving through the committees that does do that. But actually, the fine is only $50 the first time, and the ticket, second one, is $225. So we do not increase the fines, and the bill basically is a pretty simple bill, and to my knowledge, has no opposition. Mr. Chair, that's the conclusion of my remarks. I'll stand by for questions, and we have a number of testifiers, unless Representative Hornstein has something to say.
Well, I just thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank Representative Uglem for his great work on this. We've been collaborating on this for a couple of years now, and just the one thing I want to add for the committee is that, you know, we have several sources of death and injury on the roadway: speeding, DWI, seatbelt, lack of seatbelt use. We've gotten a handle on reducing injuries and fatalities on those other three. But distraction is the fastest growing. It's not necessarily the number one source of problems on the highway, but it's the fastest growing one. And when we look at all of the new technologies available to distract people while they're driving, we got to get a handle on it. And this bill will really help law enforcement, particularly enforce the texting ban, which we passed several years ago, and will, I think, be a huge help to reducing the deaths and injuries we have on the road due to distraction. So I, again, appreciate your hearing this bill, Mr. Chair, and very much appreciate all of the support we've had, and particularly the families that have been affected by this have been very powerful voices in support of the legislation.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you know, I'm on the bill as a co-author, but I do have a question on lines 1.11 and 1.12, where it was struck when the system is used exclusively for navigation purposes, and then it's added that is physically integrated into the vehicle. Exactly what is meant by that? Does that mean that I can plug, I've got one of those holders and I plug it into the cigarette lighter machine, or that I plug it into that orifice and I attach my cell phone and I can navigate from there? Is that physically integrated? Or if I got a little pad that I set it on and I can look at it, is that physically integrated? How does this work?
Representative Uglem.
Representative Powell, thank you for the question. You just said it. It's attached, okay? When you plug it in, it's attached to the dash, and that's how the laws throughout the other parts of the United States are being enforced, to my knowledge.
Representative Howell?
Thank you. I would hope that somewhere along the line we add a definition of integrated, because I think that that would be an important thing as far as law enforcement being able and the courts to be able to determine what integrated is. I think it's probably pretty important to define what integrated is, and not where it goes onto the picture screen of the newer vehicles, because some of us still drive 20-year-old vehicles and don't have that luxury of having that capability. The other question I have is on, and this isn't your handout, but it is to this handout, and maybe I should wait till those folks come up. But is it true that in Illinois the actual fatality went up when they started this bill? That's what this chart seems to say.
Representative Powell.
Representative Uglem.
Representative Powell, perhaps Minnesota Safety Council can speak.
And we can do wait until they testify. That'd be fine.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support your bill. I think it's basically a good idea, but I don't want people to think it's a good idea to talk on a cell phone, even with a hands-free device. You are still distracted, and a chicken wing is still a distraction. A cup of coffee is still a distraction. I don't want to send a signal that because you're doing it hands-free that you are safe. You're not. It's still a distraction. So, like I said, I'm supporting the bill, but I don't want to send the wrong signal that, okay, you're using a hands-free device, it's okay. I've been on 494 and seen somebody using a hands-free device and, you know, waving their arms while they're talking, and obviously very involved in their conversation and still distracted. When you're driving, when you're behind the wheel, you need to be driving and paying attention to what's going on, not doing anything else. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good point. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Uglum, something that Representative Howe just said. So you provided an example of something that would not be integrated. Just for my own purposes of clarification then, for would it be true that something that would be integrated would be something where the audio system is obviously playing through the speakers, et cetera, for GPS now, for GPS navigation. But I've been in vehicles, and I don't have one of these vehicles, but I've been in vehicles where there's a screen, a monitor that's either in the center, but it's on the dashboard that is in the line of sight of the driver, that while the audio system is playing, telling to go left, right, how many more miles there might be to go, there's a screen that the driver of the vehicle can look at that is part of this of the vehicle. Would that be an example of an integrated system?
Representative Uglum?
Representative Lucero, yes, that is an integrated system. We do have the Minnesota Safety Council here to demonstrate some of the methods of hands-free and the integration here later on in our testimony.
Follow-up? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so then just to make sure I understand the difference then. So the screen, in the example I just provided, that would be permissible under the bill if I understood you correctly, but then a mobile phone operating in a navigation mode displaying a very similar, you know, the road, left, right turns, things like that, leaning up or maybe Velcroed or however it's affixed, attached, in the exact same location where that screen that's integrated would be not permissible, permissible under the bill. Is that correct?
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that is in a hands-free mode, Representative Lucero. And we do have Colonel Langer here that can talk about that, too, from the Minnesota Highway Patrol. But that is in a hands-free mode. That is a cell phone that is in a hands-free mode. And just to reiterate a little bit, when I'm using my phone as a GPS device, of course, I simply put it on speaker, set it down, and it gives me the turn-by-turn navigation verbally. It's the easiest thing in the world. Over 90% of the people in the state of Minnesota now have smartphones that have that capability. And if they do not, again, the Minnesota Safety Council will show and demonstrate just how easy it is to take a phone that may be obsolete and make it have that capability.
Mr. Chair, just one more quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, okay, that's an important clarification. I appreciate that because it sounds like in my example then of a mobile phone in navigation mode that's in a hands-free mode, so the driver's not touching it, the audio is coming out of the mobile phone or it's coming out of the speakers if it's Bluetooth integrated, about the visual portion of the mobile phone in GPS mode that might be attached to a line-of-sight position of the driver that would still be permitted under this bill.
Mr. Chair? Yes, it's hands-free.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We do have some testifiers. What, Colonel Matt Langer? Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and my name is Matt Langer. I have the honor and privilege of serving as the chief of the Minnesota State Patrol. I appreciate the questions that have been asked in the interest of safety. I don't think I need to convince anyone here that distracted driving is a problem on our roads and that many people are killed and injured as a result of people driving in a distracted fashion. There's several people that will testify from their own personal experience. What I wanted to bring forward to you was from the enforcement perspective, the challenge with enforcing the texting ban, which of course has been illegal for quite some time, including an enhancement for a subsequent offense. Our challenge is getting the initial offense, not so much even thinking about the subsequent offense, because from a reality standpoint, if I'm driving next to someone and I'm going down the road as one of our state troopers or county sheriff's deputies or peace officers, and I look over and next to me I see someone with their device doing this, they're not paying attention to the road in front of them. Trooper makes that traffic stop, and what they more often than not encounter is a question of, I saw you texting. That's illegal in Minnesota, to which the response is, no, I wasn't texting. I was looking for a phone number. And the way our current law is written, that is legal. It's illegal to text. It's legal to look for a phone number and drive. although you still have to be driving with reasonable and due care, so there's some argument with how we can handle those situations. In plain language, what this bill does is it says just put the phone down and drive. And so you can still make the phone call. Yes, there's an argument about whether or not you're still safe when you're making that phone call and whether or not you're distracted. But at least you have the opportunity to be paying attention to what's in front of you by putting the phone down and removing that roadside argument between law enforcement and the motoring public about whether or not they were looking for a phone number, looking for an address, searching Zillow, as we saw in a recent example that ended in a death, or in fact texting. We do have a fair number of drivers that cough it up right away, and we're always appreciative of that, and they recognize what they were doing was wrong. But more often than not, there is confusion roadside. And then some good, healthy questioning about why is it legal to look for a phone number, when I say legal, arguing that it's not part of the texting offense, but then illegal to text when both of them have the exact same driving consequence to all of us when we're on the road. So from an enforcement perspective, on behalf of the Department of Public Safety, we do support this bill, and we think it would be a necessary and good behavior shift for Minnesotans, and we would join, I think we'd be the 14th state nationwide, 15th. So we're not on the cutting edge on this. We're not going first, although sometimes it feels that way when we talk about some of the language. But if there's not any questions, I'll let other people testify with their heartfelt stories.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. Just thank you for doing this. Just a comment. My daughter lived in New York for a number of years, and it must have been 15 years ago that it was made very clear you don't even have a phone in your hand in New York. You get, if an officer sees you with a phone in your hand, and at that time it really was, you know, up to your ear, you got stopped and got a ticket. So I think we've got a long way to go, but this is wonderful. Thank you.
Representative Becker-Pinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also, I was one of those people that would have liked to be on the bill, but hit the 30. Yep. So I was glad to hear that there'll be a clone, because I'm very supportive. And the thing I wanted to comment was related to what Colonel Langer spoke to as far as the confusion about what's legal and what's not. I spoke to my son's first grade class a couple months ago, and I had to quickly come up with a bill that they could understand, and I talked about how, well, several years ago the legislature made it illegal to text and drive. And the entire rest of my conversation with a bunch of first graders, well, but what if my mom's at a stop sign? What if she's holding it down here? What if my dad's doing, you know? And so it just was really clear to me that the behavior is happening a lot, and our kids are seeing us, you know, seeing folks using their phones and being distracted. And the same way that my parents taught me, like, I can't even move in a vehicle until I have my seatbelt on because it just doesn't feel right. We're also now sending the message to the younger generation that you put the phone, you know, in your purse in the back seat, or just completely out of sight and out of your grasp, to really stop the behavior. So I just think it's really important that we're doing this now, and that we make it clear that you can't have the phone in your hand while you're driving. So I thank you for bringing this forward, and I absolutely think that it's necessary. Even if a first grader can now understand, then we should certainly expect our adult drivers and even teenage drivers to understand. So thank you.
Thank you. Bob Johnson.
Mr. Chair, we have Mark Caldera pinch hitting for Bob Johnson this morning.
Thank you.
I didn't hear him. Sorry. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mark Calda. I'm the Vice President of Public Affairs for the Insurance Federation in Minnesota. The IFM is a state trade association for property casualty insurance, and for purposes of this discussion, property casualty is auto insurance. We are the folks that provide auto insurance to Minnesota consumers, and you will hear some testimony of a very personal nature in a few minutes, and so this issue is very personal for a lot of people in this room. I'm here really to present the economic perspective, and I'll split that into two areas, first for consumers and then also for businesses. For consumers, we do compile some statistics on average auto insurance premiums in Minnesota. For about 20 years, there was a long-term increase in auto insurance premiums that pretty much corresponded with the rate of inflation. Around 2005 or so, though, because of fewer miles driven, because of the economic problems that we had back then, the recession, there were fewer miles driven, we saw about a five-year period of time where the average number of crashes reduced by about 30%, claims costs from our member companies reduced about 30%, and average premiums in Minnesota reduced about 30%. And then roughly around 2010 or so, we saw a disturbing trend, and that is that long-term decrease of about 30% started to level off. So for about two or three years, we had flat premiums, and unfortunately, in the last 5 years now, we have seen a definite and distinct increase in claims costs, which has increased the average auto premium. We were paying almost $900 a year on average for motor vehicle insurance in Minnesota back in 2005. We bottomed out at just under $700, and even in the last 5 years or so now, we've seen about a 15% increase in claims costs, which has resulted in about a 15% increase in average auto premiums for personal carriers. Last year, two insurance company CEOs were quoted in national publications saying that distracted driving is an epidemic. They are seeing, national companies are seeing an increase in claims costs, which are being passed along to consumers in the form of higher insurance premiums. And our numbers definitely bear that out. On a commercial perspective, one of the biggest companies that sells commercial insurance is down in Owatonna, Federated Insurance, a great Minnesota company, hundreds of employees in Owatonna. They're not a household name because they sell mostly commercial lines to businesses and trade associations. Their CEO, Jeff Fetters, was at a roundtable discussion that the proponents had about a month ago out at the corporate campus of Cargill in Wayzata, and he reiterated the fact that there was a disturbing trend for commercial auto insurance, and his statistic was that about half, 50% of all commercial auto claims now that his company is seeing involve some element of distraction, not necessarily always smartphone use, but half of all their claims are distracted, and most of that is because of smartphone use. It's very unfortunate. And so the bottom line is that from an economic perspective, that there is a definite economic cost to distracted driving in Minnesota, and consumers and businesses are paying the price for that. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm going to support the bill, but my question is, will insurance rates across Minnesota go down when we pass this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilstrom, of course, this is a question that people ask all the time. It's very difficult to say by exactly how much, but I think if you look at the data from 2005 to 2010, there was a 30% reduction in crashes, a 30% reduction in claims costs, and a 30% reduction in premiums. Anytime you do anything that reduces the claim costs, and we think that this bill would do that based on what's happened in other states, excuse me, that definitely would have an impact here. So we can't say exactly how much, but we know that it would if claims costs come down, which we think they will.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Uglum, will we see a report at the end of this to confirm that insurance rates actually go down if we have less crashes?
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilstrom, just open your mail and watch for your premium. No, I don't know. We can certainly look into that. It's probably a good idea.
Thank you. Next testifiers will be Lisa Cones. Good morning. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Cons, and I am with the Minnesota Safety Council. I am here today to show you some of the different options you have with utilizing your cell phone in a one-touch mode to make it easy to utilize. Most phones come today when you purchase them with options that are readily available. For the one-touch phone that I have with my phone, it's just an earbud. And so you one ear, but not two, because it's illegal to have two. Simply just push this little piece that comes with it, and I can push it next to my voice. Phone home, once you push this, as it says right on my phone, you don't even have to look at the phone, call home. My phone now is calling home. And it dials my phone number. That's the one touch right there. One touch, call home. My phone's calling home. Now, you don't have to have a smartphone to do that. There's other options. And the options that I'd like to show with you, so there's this false sense that you have to go out and purchase a smartphone in order to make this technology work. You don't have to do that. For phones that are older, there's technology. We just went to the dollar store, and you can buy technology for older phones. And you can buy cables that you plug in, USB cables that plug right into your phone, that plug into your vehicle, so you can have surround sound right in your vehicle. Doesn't matter the age of the phone. It doesn't matter the age of the vehicle. There's very smart and simple solutions right from the dollar store that are available. And you can go right online and Google solutions all the way back to the age of the phone and the age of the vehicle on how to adapt those solutions to vehicles back to the early 80s and vehicles that are flip phones to make that solution work within your phone's range and your vehicle's age. There's all sorts of gadgets out there. You can even put in this sort of one-touch that plugs into a flip phone to make it one-touch capability, so you now are hands-free with that flip phone. So in terms of thinking you have to go out and buy a smartphone, that's not necessarily the case. You can still be hands-free with that phone and have a flip phone. It's not going to cost you to go out and have to buy that smartphone. Any questions?
Well, thank you. Next testifier, Michael Hansen. Good morning. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Mike Hansen, and I currently have the privilege of serving the citizens of Minnesota as the director for the Office of Traffic Safety. At the Office of Traffic Safety, we're in the business of research and study and program administration, and we look for the opportunities and for the options to affect driver behavior in order to improve traffic safety and highway safety across the state of Minnesota. And the legislation that is before you is very simply that. It's about modifying behavior, getting people to make a better choice behind the wheel. And hopefully we will see a reduction in the number of preventable tragedies that take place as a result of bad decisions. This is really, if you look at the successes that we've had in traffic safety, and I believe it was mentioned earlier by one of the representatives, we've gotten better at addressing the problems of impaired driving, of speeding, and of folks who do not put their seatbelts on. But when it comes to distraction, and particularly to the use of electronic devices in motor vehicles, we are sliding in the wrong direction. And so this is kind of one of those incremental changes that needs to be made in order for us to continue to make Minnesota roads as safe as possible. And so the legislation is exactly that. As Colonel Langer testified, it will make enforcement easier for the troopers, officers, and deputies who are out there trying to keep us safe. And it will change driver behavior. If drivers know that there's a consequence for breaking the law, they are much more likely to be voluntarily compliant. And if we can gain that voluntary compliance, we will save lives. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can for the committee.
Well, thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Next testifier is John Oslender.
Sorry about that. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Hausladen, president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. The Minnesota Trucking Association is a statewide safety organization that represents approximately 650 motor carriers and their allied vendors. And we are here today to support House File 1180. Now, you've heard some of the statistics today. Just one that I want to add to the debate is that the facts are indisputable. Distracted driving does cause crashes. And according to the National Safety Council, if someone is talking on a cell phone, it puts that driver and all the other drivers around them at a four times greater risk than their undistracted peers of getting into a crash. From a trucking perspective, that's important to us because our professional drivers are on the road every day,
you have a lot more exposure. And those drivers have a unique vantage point to see what takes place in other vehicles. They're high up, they can look down, and I have to tell you, the news is not good. Far too many drivers are preoccupied with operating their phones, which shifts them from the driving task to that phone. And we believe that the restrictions in this legislation will enhance safety by redirecting that focus back on the driving task itself. Now, I think what's important to note, truckers already abide by this. This isn't an experiment. Federal regulations prohibit truck drivers from speaking on the phone unless it is in a one-touch, hands-free mode. And what we can say from a trucking company perspective, it's been a very positive thing. It elicits good behavior. It gives tools for fleet managers to help direct their drivers, and it keeps people focused on the driving task. And more importantly, a lot of trucking companies have taken a basically zero-tolerance approach to cell phone use. They prohibit it of any kind while moving. They may send a text message that says, call us when you get back. Of course, they don't read the message. It's on a display that's permanently mounted or fixed. So it's also important to note that the MTA supported the ban on texting while driving before that became for the legislature. So for all these reasons, we do look forward to passing House File 1180 and reducing distracted driving for all Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions from the member? Representative Considine.
Mr. Chair, actually, I have a question for Mr. Hansen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the technology exist where you could make the car a dead zone while it is in operation?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I believe that that technology probably does exist, and the technology even exists for drivers to make that individual choice by using a cell phone Faraday bag where you place your cell phone in it, and it will not work. It still is accessible, but it closes it off from the external environment that talks to it or allows you to communicate with it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I believe Representative Howe has a question for Lisa Collins.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I just want to go back to this handout and, sure. And where it says Illinois, it looks like it increased 4.4% in fatalities. Is there a reason why? What is the cause of that? Do we know?
I do not know that answer. What I do know with Illinois is their texting citations did go up that year. I do not know the answer behind why the fatalities increased.
Thank you. I believe, Representative Uglum, I believe you have a other testifiers. I'll have you introduce them.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a couple of victims that would like to come forward. Greg?
You could please state your name for the record.
Greg Tikalski.
Thank you.
Chair Johnson and committee members, we want to thank you for giving this bill the opportunity it deserves. It was a long fight that started last year for us, and so we appreciate the opportunity to be heard. I have the honor and heavy burden of representing those who lost a loved one to a distracted driver. Then again, so do you. On October 28, 2015, my dad, Joe Tikalski, was killed while walking along the road to get his morning paper. The irony of the tragedy is that dad drove school bus for nearly 50 years, keeping kids safe. The driver was texting, and the witness said she never applied her brakes, and there were no skid marks at the scene. Unfortunately, this is an increasingly common theme. The driver stated before she hit send, she hit a yellow blur. That yellow blur was my dad. This is how visible he would have been. This was the jacket he was wearing, or a style of jacket he was wearing. But if you're not looking, it really doesn't matter. My last memory of my dad can't be of his body lying in a ditch alongside the field he farmed his entire life. My family has joined the fight to make our roads safer. Because until it happened to us, we just thought of distracted driving as a problem. Now we realize it's an epidemic. There are a number of people behind me who have unfortunately worked a lot longer than we have on this bill's passage. My son and daughter speak at driver's ed classes and offer cell slips to those who sign a pledge that they are not going to use their cell phone while they drive. Others speak to groups about the horrific consequences of handheld use of cell phones while driving. We can't do it alone. We're here in St. Paul to plead for your help. Last May, the Star Tribune poll indicated nearly 80% of Minnesotans believe it should be illegal to talk on the phone while driving. And the same percentage, roughly, believe that texting or using social media while driving should be treated to, equal to, or more severely than drunken driving. Nearly 80%. Even as politically divided as we've become, there seems to be one thing we can agree on. No political belief keeps you safe on our roads. Distracted drivers have many faces and kill Republicans and Democrats alike. A legislative assistant said, people aren't clamoring to hear this bill. The Star Tribune poll suggests there is support for legislation. We are the vocal minority. The Star Tribune poll represents the silent majority. I love my civil liberties as much as anybody in this room, but there's a balance. In my civics classes, we talk about Thomas Hobbes and John Locke, whose ideas on civil liberties influence the writers of the Constitution. Hobbes says, without government, we live in a state of nature. In nature, each person does what they want. Eventually, we'll have a war of all against all. To avoid this, Hobbes says we enter into a social contract, giving up some rights for government protection. John Locke, a staunch advocate of individual rights, who identified the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and property, he claimed my right to liberty when another person's right to liberty infringes upon another's right to life, government needs to get involved. My dad's right to life was taken at the hands of a driver who abused her right to liberty. Years ago, my biggest concern was to be on the road between 11 o'clock and 2 on a Friday or Saturday night. Today, we have to be concerned at all hours of the day because of distracted drivers. It's a crapshoot. Look at the faces of the drivers who pass you. If you're not scared, you're not paying attention. There's proof that hands-free laws save lives. The National Transportation Safety Administration statistics show a drop in fatalities in those states that have implemented handheld vans. Representative Howe, I believe, correct? That study you're looking at, there were 14 entities, political entities reporting, I say because Washington, D.C. is in there, so not a state. But of the 14 that are reporting, 13 of those indicate a drop in fatalities. John Hausladen had mentioned the Truckers Association, which their law was passed based on information from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. That's great. We have a law for our truck drivers. But I can tell you a Ford Freestyle can do the same thing. After our youngest son passed his permit test, we were given a booklet for the parents titled For the Parents of Teen Drivers, published by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. A portion of the booklet is devoted to distracted driving and cites a study done at the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute. I'm assuming our legislators support the contents of this pamphlet if it's handed out at every licensing station in Minnesota. So I called Virginia Tech, and I was able to speak with the lead researcher, Dr. Charlie Clower, believing Minnesota would support what Virginia Tech has to say. She stated, Virginia Tech's research unequivocally supports a handheld ban legislation. We firmly believe that hands-free device use does not increase risk to the same degree as physically manipulating the phone. Two hands on the wheel are safer than one. I've heard requiring hands full and use discriminatory against those who can't afford Bluetooth. Everyone behind me would have one more argument to that. How about a funeral expense of $7,000 being placed on you immediately with no warning and no budgeting? Historically, Minnesota has been slow to pass legislation affecting safety on our roads. We were among the last states to lower the BAC to 0.08 and raise the legal minimum drinking age to 21. It doesn't have to be that way with hands free. As we watched Oregon and Washington pass handheld bans in 2017, Minnesota buried another 60 victims to distracted driving. Had this bill passed a year ago, it's very likely Robert Bursick, the most recent victim of our negligent law, would be alive today. We're all familiar with his story. And another member of our small community of New Prague, Phil Ilg, who lost his life on his 56th birthday while biking 56 miles. I couldn't sleep at night knowing my committee could have made a difference. While it's too late to save my dad and those who portraits are among us, it's not too late to save ourselves. Among the portraits, we have a mirror because we don't know who will be the next victim of distracted driving. Before we bury another Minnesotan, let's bury this antiquated law. Before we bury another Minnesotan, let's bury the political hatchet that's dividing the passage of this bill. Before we send out one more death and funeral notice, let's send out a birth announcement of a new law that's going to save lives. You hold the key to saving lives. Please pass the hands-free bill.
Representative Neuberger?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the Maurer family was not able to make it because of prior commitments, but I have Representative Jim Neuberger who would like to talk about the scene of that accident.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to come down to this table? Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, folks from the public here, thank you for being here today. This is an important topic that we talk about. That's a very difficult topic for me. I'm going to endeavor to keep myself together here. A few summers back, I was driving down Highway 10, and I was one of the very first vehicles on a crash that happened right in my district, right 5 minutes from my home. You've all heard me say a thousand times, I've been a paramedic for 30 years, and I'm very endured to this kind of thing. Motor vehicle crashes is what I do for a living. Driving... came across this crash. We were, like I said, one of the first ones on the scene. What had happened was you have Highway 10, which is about a 65-mile-an-hour zone, going from St. Cloud down to the metro. County Road 11 cuts across Highway 10, and there's a light there. There's an intersection. It's a controlled intersection. The light was green for the people on the county road, and the Maurer family were in their minivan. They were queued up to go, to turn, to get onto the Highway 10. First car went, they had the green light, they were fine. Second car went, they were fine. Like everybody else, they just followed the car in front of you because the light's green. They pulled out onto Highway 10 and they got broadsided by another driver on Highway 10 who was doing in excess of 65 miles an hour. And this individual was on Facebook at the time, was too busy doing a reply on Facebook. That van was split in half. The father was killed at the scene. He was dead right there. The young daughter, they tried to, she still had some vital signs. They worked very hard to stabilize her as much as they could. They flew her out. Two of my regular paramedic partners were on that call. To this day, they have a very difficult time talking about it. Suffice to say, I had a front row seat to that one. I've had four other fatalities in my district that have been directly related to distracted driving. I am very much in support of this bill. I'm the third author on this bill. I could sit here all day and tell you story after story about crash after crash, but it's time for this bill to become the law. And I'm a very conservative person. Most of my friends on the other side of the aisle would probably have other words for that. But the point I'm trying to make here is this. Life is a right. Driving is a privilege. And all we are doing with this bill is making a privilege safer to protect a right. I support this bill. Please vote yes.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Uglum. I'm signed on to this bill. I think it's definitely time. Can you speak to the studies that have been done that even hands-free is a bit of a distraction for drivers? Because I know there have been some studies that say the difference between being in your car hands-free, speaking on a phone, is very different than being in a car with a passenger and having a conversation. I mean, did you consider, I'm going to say it, going farther with this bill, or is this what you felt that the appetite of the legislature and the people of Minnesota would be amenable to?
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Representative Dean. You know, there are lots of distractions. Eating a hamburger, we mentioned some of these, some of the other ones. I think the greatest distraction that my local police department came across was a guy that was actually had an electronic walk and was grilling in his car. But nonetheless, I think we have to be realistic about things, and hands-free has proven to be a very, very good tool to reduce a lot of injuries and deaths around the country. Would I like it if nobody talked on a phone in the entire state of Minnesota while you're driving? Yes, I would like that, but I guess really from a realistic standpoint, that's not the case, and I chose to make this bill similar to the other states that are doing it because it works. And I'm a realist, and I understand that there are times that you need to talk on your phone. My son is a salesman. He makes his living selling things. And, yes, he talks on the phone, but he does it in a hands-free manner. And everybody in his company, which is a major U.S. chemical company, has the same rules. And I might add that the largest privately independent held corporation in the world, Cargill, and many of you maybe were at that seminar, they do the same thing, and they've found out that it reduces their insurance rates, of course, but it reduces their casualties worldwide.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to testify? With that, Representative Uglum, do you wish to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion for House File 1180 to go to Ways and Means. I have just a couple of closing comments.
Go ahead.
Members, there's not a lot of times when we have a bill that can make such a difference for so many people here in the state of Minnesota. A lot of times we go to our committee meetings and we go to the floor and we have both sides going against one another. A little bit of acrimony, that's politics, I guess. But this bill can bring us all together, can make a big difference. And I think it's indisputable. We need to move forward. I hope that the other body, whatever it's called, the other body, will move forward with this too, because we owe it to all of our advocates, all of our good people that have been touched by this. And I can tell you, we have to do it. Thank you.
With that, Representative Uglum renews his motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you for your consideration.
I want to thank everybody that came here today, and we will be adjourned till tomorrow at 10:15.